Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, celebrating the Aliento Tequila photo exhibit with a tequila tasting and other entertainment, November 8th, 6 to 9 p.m. Ticket info and more at texancultures.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For many families, a house can be the greatest financial asset over a lifetime. More than two-thirds of Americans own their own home by the new millennium. But the financial crisis of 2008 led to a debilitating collapse of the housing market. Over a decade later, the homeownership in the United States has yet to recover, disproportionately affecting the working class and communities of color. According to our guest, this is no accident. It's public policy that has been crafted to hurt the public and to enrich an elite class. Aaron Glantz joins us. He's a nationally recognized prize-winning reporter, author of Home Wreckers, How a Gang of Wall Street Kingpins, Hedge Fund Magnates, Crooked Banks, and Vulture Capitalists Suckered Millions Out of Their Homes and Demolished the American Dream. Aaron Glantz, welcome to The Source.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So it's a long title. There's a lot there, but there you got a lot in the book going on. And so I really kind of want to streamline this conversation and help people understand. Mainly thing I want to help people understand is that the housing market is really shaped by a lot of public policy. And we're dealing with market forces that are not just acts. These are not acts of nature. These are acts of man, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I wanted to ask was, if 8 million Americans lost their homes during the Great Recession and the housing bust, including hundreds of thousands in Texas, what happened to them, right? Those homes didn't just disappear. Who bought them? Who profited when we all suffered? I felt like the media was kind of stuck, still trying to figure out who caused the mess in 2008, not realizing that more than a decade had passed. And one fact that your listeners should all know is that the homeownership rate in America didn't only go down during the collapse itself. It went down during every year of the Obama administration. It went down in 2008, 2009, 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, until it finally bottomed out at a 50-year low in 2016. And because for most working families, our home and our wealth are tied together, this led to a wealth gap between the richest 0.1 of 1% of this country and the other 90% that was greater than in 100 years. And so I wanted to know, like, who wins when the rest of us lose? And the answer to that was the home wreckers.
Now, you make that point that home ownership just kept declining during the Obama years, and that an argument can be made that there were laws, policies put in place that actually made it harder to buy a home because they were afraid of these ninja loans and maybe they overcompensated.
Well, I mean, there's definitely stuff to look at in the mortgage lending arena. And you're exactly right that there were a lot of loans that were made during the bubble that should have never been made. And you mentioned ninja loans. This would be loans where people had no income, no job, no assets, but no problem, right? And they got the loan anyway. And that's one of the things that collapsed the entire global economy. That was not the Like rolling back those kinds of products was not the only thing that happened in the years after the bust. We also had giant giveaways to the banks. So I write in the book, for example, about this big bank in California called IndyMac, which was one of these bad banks that foreclosed on so many homes. But after it collapsed, it actually came to be owned by the government. And the government was so eager to get rid of this disaster of a bank that it sold it to an investment group out of New York headed by Steve Mnuchin, who is now our Treasury Secretary. And he worked together with John Paulson and George Soros and Michael Dell, the founder of Dell Computer. And they bought this bank off the government. I bought is a little bit of an overstatement because the government actually got no money out of this deal. And then the government even went so far as to pay them when they foreclosed on families to help offset their losses. So as Steve Mnuchin and his group of investors at One West Bank, as they foreclosed on over 100,000 families, including 23,000 seniors, the government, subsidized all of that. And so that's why the long subtitle you read about the vulture capitalists, the hedge fund kingpins, and the real estate moguls, because there was this group of people who came in, saw an opportunity, scooped up all of our wealth, and we actually helped them do it through generous subsidies.
Right now, San Antonio and other cities across the nation are experiencing housing crises or housing crunches. Affordable housing is disappearing. Redlining, which has continues, but also it's kind of meshed with gentrification as well. And this also is covered in your book.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, on the issue of a housing shortage and a housing crisis, I always try to put out there, as I'm talking about this book, that it wasn't that long ago that we were awash in foreclosures, right? We're told that there's a supply problem, but it was only yesterday that we were told there was too much housing, right? So we have to look at who ended up buying these properties. And, you know, across Texas and this country, there are more than 3 million homes and more than 10 million apartments that are now owned by shell companies, LLCs, LPs, LLPs with post office boxes in Delaware, where if you happen to be a tenant in that home, you may have no idea who your landlord is. You know, I write in the book about how Sean Hannity, the Fox News personality, used these vehicles to buy almost 1,000 properties across the American South. Steve Schwartzman, the founder of Blackstone, started a company that now owns 80,000 homes across the Sand and Sun Belt. Tom Barrack, Donald Trump's best friend, who introduced Ivanka at the convention and organized the inauguration, he founded a company that bought up 30,000 homes. So as we talk about these issues of the high cost of housing, gentrification, and displacement, let's not lose sight of the people who are controlling the real estate.
As these people who have all these resources and are able to suck up the available housing and buy it, that drives up the price of real estate and also pushes out people who can't compete in that market, which is your working class family, right?
Well, let's talk about financing, right? Because everyone borrows money to buy a house. Even these guys, even these shell company owners, they're also borrowing money, and often from the same people that you and I would be borrowing money from to buy our home. So JP Morgan Chase, the biggest bank in America, it's lending to individual families who want to buy homes, declined precipitously between 2010 and 2016, right? So why aren't people able to buy homes? Well, they can't get a loan from the bank. And you mentioned redlining. We found in our reporting at Reveal that when people of color, even when they make the same amount of money, try to take out the same size loan and buy in the same neighborhood, that these big banks are more likely to deny their loan applications than even whites, who also face barriers. Now, at the same time Chase is pulling out of lending to families, it's extending gigantic new lines of credit to these corporate landlords like Invitation Homes, which is the company founded by Blackstone. So, you know, I write in the book about this one house in Southern California, a 1,500 square foot home with a small patch of grass and a lemon tree out front, three bedrooms, one bathroom. If you go to the property record, you will see a $960 million lien recorded against this house, right? So not like my house where you might see a small loan to remodel the kitchen or my mortgage that I'm trying to pay off, but a almost $1 billion lien. And that's because these corporate landlords have gone to companies like Chase and take out these gigantic loans against all their properties, which they then put in their pocket or used to buy still more properties. So we have to look at the system of finance in this country and how it is really rigging the game against working families, especially families of color.
And how have families of color, how do they fare in the mortgage meltdown and in the so-called recovery?
Well, the wealth gap between the races is greater than it's been at almost any point since the Jim Crow era when segregation is legal. And so what we've documented in this book is how, you know, banks like Steve Mnuchin's One West Bank concentrated 70% of its foreclosures in California, which is the state where this bank was based, 70% of them were in neighborhoods of color. Then you look at their lending. Who are they helping to actually buy homes? The same bank over 5 years helped only 3 African-American families buy homes and just 11 Latino families. Over 5 years, a major bank run by a man who's now the Treasury Secretary. So this is really cause for concern. It's really cause for concern. And there's so much here that obviously this is why I decided it had to be put into a book.
But we're going up to a break, so I don't want to ask you a big, tough question. But, you know, it seems like this, you cover these massive events that are shaping people's lives when it comes to their homes. You talk about it's their big investment, but also people need decent places to live, and it's becoming harder to do that.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm looking at this issue of equity, right? What can you own? What can you hold on to? How can you have security? Because in this country, the unemployment rate is low, right? People have jobs, and yet people still feel like they're struggling because they have no security. The people who live in these corporate-owned housing units are looking at rents that increase every month. Meantime, I'm sitting here owning my home with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. Right. You know, all the same, year after year.
I got to go to break. We'll be right back. More to talk about. 210-614-8980. Question about home wreckers. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
The surviving members of the musical group Los Tesoros de San Antonio say no one can take their place.
They cannot follow our footsteps, our children, because they're not legends like us.
Los Tesoros were recently honored in the nation's capital with the highest award for folk and traditional arts. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. 210-614-8980 is the number to call. With us online, Aaron Glancy is a Pulitzer Prize finalist. He's won multiple Peabody's, other major awards for his reporting. His latest book is Home Wreckers, writing about the gang of Wall Street kingpins and others who demolished the American dream of owning your own home. We have a presidential primary for Democrats right now. Are they talking about this?
Many of them have plans. You won't be surprised to know that Elizabeth Warren was the first person with a plan to address redlining and the African-American and Hispanic homeownership gap. Since then, Kamala Harris has come out with a plan. Pete Buttigieg has something that he calls the Douglas Plan that involves seizing unused properties by eminent domain and giving them basically to families as a 21st century homestead act. Bernie Sanders has a plan. Joe Biden, of the leading candidates, is notably MIA. And, you know, we have a general sense of where the president stands because he has put all of these home wreckers in his administration. So we've been talking about Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, who took our money, government subsidies to foreclose on people. Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, did basically the same thing. In South Florida with a bank called Bank United, taking billions of dollars to foreclose. And then we have the corporate landlords who are close to the president as well. So We know where the president stands. The tax bill that was passed has a big loophole for the owners of shell companies who make money by collecting rent, but it capped the mortgage interest and property tax deductions that working families pay when they own their homes. So, you know, these are the trade-offs that the current administration is making. I would like to see at the next Democratic debate for the moderators to press the candidates to really debate their plan on housing in the same way that they've been pressed to exchange their views on healthcare, so that we all have a better sense of exactly how their plans would work.
So you didn't mention Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio, former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development only for 2 years, but still he could be a powerful voice on the debate stage, bringing light to this system that it's broken.
Yeah, I mean, he's also, I neglected to say that he also has a plan for this. And so hearing, you know, Julian Castro and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris, all of whom have things that they've written down on paper to address some of the issues that we've discussed, hearing them engage with each other on the debate stage, I think we would learn a lot about all of them through that.
People are afraid that most voters just won't pay attention to this. It's bad enough listening to them argue about these Medicaid for all and, you know, type situations and then talk about housing. I mean, do you think that people would want to talk about this issue?
People really, really care about the future of opportunity in America. Right. I got the idea for this book watching the presidential campaign in 2016, watching Donald Trump running a populist campaign for president, you know, tapping into people's anger, watching Bernie Sanders on the left tap into people's economic anger as well. So we had in 2016, at a time of low unemployment and a high Dow Jones Industrial Average, incredible rage on both sides of the political spectrum in this country over the state of affairs of our economy. And we have to talk about the cause of that. You know, in America today, the average homeowner is worth about $200,000 and the average renter is worth about $2,000. Now, homeowners don't make 100 times as much money as renters. They just have the ability to save by building equity through their home. That's because we are a paycheck-to-paycheck society. Most working people spend most of their money on essentials like food, shelter, healthcare, transportation, clothing, and all of those things, except housing, will always be gone as soon as you spend the money. When you burn that gas, it's never coming back. Right? When you pay your healthcare premiums, that is money you will never see again. The only money that people spend month after month, up to 40, sometimes 50% of their income, is on housing. And either it's going to come back to you in the share of equity, or you are going to be giving that equity to your landlord in exchange for a roof over your head.
Got a question from Byron online. In your research, was investor, hedge fund manager John Paulson involved in a housing crisis?
Yes. His involvement in crashing the economy by betting against subprime mortgages and making $15 billion off of that is well known. I come into the story after the crash, and as I noted, he was part of this group with Steve Mnuchin that acquired the Southern California Bank off the government, paying the government nothing. Now, they did invest money in the bank itself, but while they were operating this bank where John Paulson was, you know, his company owned a very large interest, foreclosed on over 100,000 people, including 23,000 seniors, and we, the government, subsidized that.
So this is my working theory, and you just tell me if I'm straight up wrong or not. Because we have programs all the time. We're talking about the lack of affordable housing and the housing crisis, and it's really hard for working families and the rising rents all the time. and we try to come up with these local solutions, build more houses, get public housing, affordable housing from the city going. But it seemed like we're not talking about these market forces that are driving this situation. And these market forces are being shaped by public policy in Washington, D.C., in HUD, at Fed, and with the SEC, everything, right?
Yeah, you're right. And also the other important related question is who's making money off of this, right?
They're getting rich off it, not just a little bit of money, billions and billions.
Right, right. So that's the whole focus of this book, is to focus on the people who profit off of this situation and the way they are now in power. You know, these are people who benefited all throughout the Obama years and then rode Trump to office and are now rigging the economy even more to benefit them at our expense.
And we say it should be, the economy should be geared towards helping middle class families. And is that the situation now?
Well, the system of banking and finance, which is what we're talking about, is being geared towards helping these large conglomerates. I mean, I just mentioned earlier in this half hour about how JP Morgan Chase, which is the biggest bank in America, is making billion-dollar loans to hedge fund owners of residential housing, but not lending at the levels it was during the recession to working families. I mentioned that the bank, One West Bank, where the guy who headed this bank is now the Treasury Secretary, over 5 years, while this bank was foreclosing on over 100,000 families, it helped 3 African American and 11 Latino families buy homes. And so we have to look at the system of banking and finance and credit. Nobody is buying homes with cash, not even these hedge fund guys. They're borrowing it. They're getting it financed. They're getting it financed by the big banks. And sometimes they're being financed and subsidized by us, the taxpayers.
How healthy is this sector in the economy right now? Could we see another bubble burst?
Well, it is concerning to me that you can go to a single family home out in the suburbs and you see these not only in California, where I did my field reporting, but in Phoenix, in Vegas, in Texas, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, in Atlanta, in Miami, all the places that busted 10 years ago, you see little homes with liens recorded against them that are upwards of $1 billion. And that means that these hedge funds have bundled the homes together and taken out all the equity and put it in their pocket, right? And so in some ways, it's not unlike the bubble that we were in 10 years ago, except for instead of it being, 80,000 individual homeowners taking out too much debt, now we have giant companies that are over-leveraging these homes.
What do you hope readers can take away from your book? And I hope you hope that there's hope there for readers.
Oh, yeah. We haven't had an opportunity to talk about what I learned writing this book that really did give me a lot of hope. And that was that all throughout this process that you and I have been discussing, where at every step of the way, the Obama administration sided with the banks, and now the Trump administration has come in, and basically these people are running the country. Through this whole period, there were people coming forward with really great ideas about other ways of doing things. And those ideas are out there. You know, for example, during the Great Depression, President Roosevelt founded this government-run bank called the Homeowners Loan Corporation. It refinanced 1 out of every 5 urban mortgages in America. It saved 1 million homes. When it did have to foreclose, it refinanced those homes and sold them off to new families instead of big companies. And as a result of that and the GI Bill and other government initiatives, the homeownership rate in this country grew for decades. So we know how to do it. The Homeowners Loan Corporation made money for the taxpayers because American families paid off that debt. Also, it was implemented in the most racist fashion humanly possible. Lines were drawn on maps. Communities of colors were systematically excluded. So all we have to do now is do the same thing we did back in the 30s that worked, that made money, that built the American dream and just not be racist about it this time.
Aaron Glantz is the author of Home Wreckers, How a Gang of Wall Street Kingpins, Hedge Funds Magnates, Crooked Banks, Vulture Capitalists Suckered Millions Out of Their Homes and Demolished the American Dreams. It was great talking with you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.